The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from Carter Subaru Studios. Did you hear that Ronan Farrow soundbite? You were working on your newscast.
I was. I did not hear it.
Right before the top of the hour. And the only reason I mention it, because this whole thing with the New York Attorney General, I generally don't talk a lot about the national stories, but it reminded me so much of Seattle politics and the whole Ed Murray thing. In case people don't know the story, the Attorney General for New York State, a guy named Eric Schneiderman, he has now been accused by four women of assaulting them, that he would hit them in bed, usually after he had been drinking. And I'll play why I thought there was a Seattle connection. I'll play again the Ronan Farrow soundbite that I had right before the top of the hour. But Ronan Farrow, and I also mentioned, do they say that Woody Allen's his dad or Frank Sinatra?
Well, there's a lot of speculations. If you look at him, he is an incredibly handsome man.
He's got those piercing blue eyes.
And he looks like Frank Sinatra, and he does not look like Woody Allen.
No, because Woody Allen's just kind of a goofy guy, and Ronan Farrow. But what I'm
for people who don't know, he has been busting all sorts of stories.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. For a guy who, you know, was born incredibly wealthy and looks like a pretty boy, what a journalist this guy is.
He is the epitome of a journalist.
Just broke the Weinstein story. And this is what he said a little bit earlier on CNN, why a lot of people told these women who were getting assaulted by the New York State Attorney General why they shouldn't come forward.
A lot of their friends and loved ones said, don't do it. Don't speak out against him. And in some cases, that was because they feared the risk of reprisals. You know, they described him threatening people, using his office and his power to say, you know, he could wiretap people or he could come after people. But also in some cases, Allison, those friends warned them off of talking because they thought that he had the power to do too much good for the Democratic Party.
And that's what was going on with Ed Murray through the whole child rape thing, that Sally Bagshaw was trying to keep Ed Murray in the mayor's office because she was afraid that it would hurt the party. And I'm not suggesting that this is just a Democrat thing, because I think that everybody in politics becomes...
Everybody in power. I mean, Harvey Weinstein. I mean, no one wanted to talk against him, and it was everybody knew.
Yes.
But people in power. It really doesn't have anything to do with politics.
Oh, I think so. Because politics,
I mean, people are in power in politics.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I've heard a host on this radio station say that government is their religion. And I just, when you hear that this is kind of the mindset, whether it's Seattle politics or the New York Attorney General, that they didn't want women who were assault victims to come forward because it would hurt the party. Sally Bagshaw was trying to keep Ed Murray in the mayor's office so it wouldn't hurt the party. And then, I mean, you've heard some of the things that this guy allegedly did, the Attorney General.
It's just disgusting.
Did you see his own statement?
Well, he was trying to say, he was trying to pass it off as, you know, just being playful in bed. I mean,
well, not physical. Just playful.
Role playing.
Yeah.
Ooh.
In the privacy.
That's disgusting.
In the privacy of intimate relationships, I have engaged in role-playing and other consensual sexual activity. I have not assaulted anyone. I have never engaged in non-consensual sex, which is a line I would not cross.
Seems to me it's news to the women who were with him.
Right. And
to do role-playing, you need to have someone else be in on it.
But who? Yeah, and I know that there's a lot of freaky stuff. I'm not the freakiest guy in the world, I guess.
Oh, I know. We're just...
I'm neither a sadist nor a masochist.
We're just encroaching that TMI point.
Well, yeah, like that's a shock to people that I'm not that freaky. But role-playing, who gets off on smacking people around as part of their role-playing?
Have you read 50 Shades of Grey?
Well, I heard somebody reference that. No, I haven't. Which also shouldn't surprise anybody that I've not read it.
Or seen the movie.
No. Yeah.
But again,
is that what that's about?
Yes, in that case.
He's smacking people around.
Well, there's all sorts of weird things in there. But in that case, she was part of it. She knew. In this case, the women are like, yeah, that's not what we were expecting.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. There's a big segment of the world I don't
but understand. But there is, I know, and that could be a whole nother topic. But in this case, the irony, given that this is the guy who was going after Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, that was Schneiderman's big thing was he was, you know, at the vanguard of the Me Too movement. And then it turns out he's smacking women around in bed and trying to pass it off now as role-playing. And then did you see this 2013 Trump tweet?
Which one?
Back in 2013, Donald Trump was feuding with this Eric Schneiderman. And as Trump tends to do, it was on Twitter. And at one point, this is 5 years ago, September 2013, Donald Trump tweeted, "Wiener is gone, Spitzer is gone, next will be lightweight Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. Is he a crook? Wait and see. Worse than Spitzer or Wiener." And Spitzer was hiring the hookers, and Wiener, we all know what Wiener was doing. And so you would assume that he's making a reference to the fact that those guys were sexual freaks. So Trump, apparently 5 years ago, knew that the Schneiderman was some kind of sexual freak.
How do they all know about this?
I don't know.
Well, he's a sick person. He's a sick puppy.
That scared me.
That was part of our exclusive interview with Donald Trump about Wiener.
Just keeps giving.
Yeah. So anyway, but that was Schneiderman's defense. Is that in the privacy of intimate relationships, I have engaged in role-playing and other consensual sexual activity. Like that is an excuse for hitting women. It's just, but that Ronan Farrow soundbite, it sounded so much like what was going on in Seattle with Ed Murray. So very much like that. Before I get to our top story this hour, I'm 10 minutes into the segment. You got to hear this. We just got some brand new audio in. A guy got pulled over a traffic stop in Aurora, Colorado, right outside of Denver. And it turns out the guy who got pulled over is the son of the mayor of Denver. So you would expect he'd be a law and order guy and admit to the cops that, hey, man, just write me up. I was wrong. Let's hear how Jordan Hancock, the son of the Denver mayor, let's hear how he handles this.
Denver?
Don't worry about it.
You and I are fine. He's the mayor of Aurora.
Guess what? I'm about to fight you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. For what?
Yeah, exactly. Don't worry about it.
Hey, being fool,
whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, whatever.
I see your dad.
And I got
fried.
Exactly. And I got my home.
I'm going to get you bleeping fired, you B-word.
How old is that guy?
How old is he? Do we know? Did you see how old he is?
I think it's in there. I think it's in the piece I gave you.
Yeah, I got the
but I love how he says, your dad's the mayor of Denver? Well, we're in Aurora.
Yeah, that's right. Let's see. The mayor's office has just released a statement about the mayor's son. We addressed this matter with Jordan, and he's apologized to the officer. While we do not support nor condone his inexcusable actions and words during this traffic stop, we love our son dearly and support him.
He's 22.
That guy's 22.
He is driving 65 and a 40.
We love our son dearly and support him. I don't know. Just leave that out of the statement. It should be just understood.
Just out of
that
curiosity.
You love your son.
Let's just say, not that this would ever happen if it were one of your daughters, but let's just say your daughter's pulled over and it. Let's just say that.
How many times are you going to say,
let's just say? Because I just want to make sure someone doesn't tune in and say your daughter did this.
Hypothetically.
Let's talk about some because that's never happened to me. I don't like playing hypotheticals.
Well, I'm just curious. What would you say? You know what? Throw her in.
I would certainly not make some public proclamation about. I would deal with it myself. Now, I mean, and I'm trying to think. This kid's 22 years old. Yeah. The mayor's son. All of my girls are over that age, and they're all adults now, and they're all responsible for their own life. I mean, I'm trying to think if that had happened at age 16 or 17. First of all, they wouldn't have had a car to drive. They, we would have dealt with it very strongly, but, you know, thankfully we've not had
I have to say, I'm on the school board at Blanchett High School, and I have a son who he only has a few more weeks left of school, and there's not a day that goes by. I said, don't do anything that's going to embarrass me.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
No, I know it. You know, and Cinco de Mayo, one of my kids went out with friends and took an Uber home. And then the next day, her sister drove her to get her car. And I was home when she got home. And I don't think it was over the limit, but it was, hey, we're not even going to dance anywhere near that line. And right. I'm just,
which is good.
I'm so thankful. Yeah, you don't mess around.
This kid sounds like an idiotic 22-year-old who's probably drinking too much.
Yeah, but just the fact that he plays the card, the daddy's the mayor. It's just pathetic. Should I get to the big lead now? Let's get right to the big lead.
The big lead, top story.
I just have to, if you didn't hear this 2 hours ago, 2 years ago, 2016, we had politicians here in Seattle who were telling us there's a homelessness crisis and there's only one way to fix it. Give us money. Funny, the people did give the money and the problem got even worse. And now the exact same politicians, you got Sawant and O'Brien, Bruce Harrell, the child rape apologist, Sally Bagshaw, Deborah Juarez, you got all of the same people who are now saying, hey, that money you gave us 2 years ago that we said would be a big step toward solving the homelessness crisis, it got worse when you gave us that money. So give us more money now. We need a business tax. We need a head tax. This was from 2016. Channel 9 was previewing the massive housing levy that was supposed to address the homelessness crisis here.
The 2016 levy proposes spending $290 million over the next 7 years, double the previous housing levy. Almost 40% of it would go to rental housing, 4% to homelessness prevention, and a little over 3% to assist low-income homeowners.
And the people, unbelievably, in their gullibility, said yes. And the problem's gotten dramatically worse. The accused child rapist was trying to sell that 2016 levy to the masses.
Mayor Ed Murray wants to take a bold step in 2016.
We should pass the largest housing affordability levy in Seattle's history.
He wants to double the seven-year levy from $145 to $290 million.
To solve the housing problem. And things got worse. The accused child rapist, he was talking up that levy every chance he got back then.
To provide emergency shelter for the 3,000 people who remain homeless on our streets would cost $49 million a year.
And so that was going 2 years ago, they told us. It'll provide housing for the 3,000 on the streets. So the people gave them the money. And what's happened? Well, now we have 5,000 on the streets. And I think it's worse than that. The more money we give them, the worse the problem's gotten. They told us that money was a solution 2 years ago. Why in God's name would anybody believe Mike O'Brien and Rob Johnson and Sawant now?
I am proposing that we double the housing levy this year.
Now, the accused child rapist apparently was just selling all of us a bill of goods because the people said yes and the problem got worse. And things are really blowing up today because Kashama Sawant, she talked to Q13, and first of all, she wants to make sure if this new levy that'll solve homelessness, she wants to make sure that none of the money will be used to sweep the encampments, like the jungle, where little girls are being raped so heroin addicts can get money for their addiction. She says, yeah, we're not going to sweep any of the encampments if you pass this business tax.
Year after year, the city of Seattle and the mayor's office have spent millions of dollars carrying out sweeps of homeless encampments. Has that reduced homelessness? No.
Yeah, so let's allow the places where 13, 14, 15-year-old girls are being turned out by drug addict pimps. Yeah, let's keep that. Does she have a message to homeowners? She talked to Q13 News.
Homeowners are saying we are compassionate towards homelessness, but we are not compassionate when it becomes lawlessness. What is your message to those homeowners who are being negatively impacted and not getting the help?
By the way, I mentioned this a couple hours ago. Listen to how she answers this. When she starts talking slowly and deliberately, because she usually is just rapid fire, she has no clue what she's going to say, and she has absolutely no clue what she is saying. When she speaks deliberately, it's just a word salad, and she says absolutely nothing. And that's, again, the question is, what do you say to homeowners whose houses are getting broken into next to these tiny house villages, whose cars are being prowled, who are the victims of assaults? What do you say to them? Listen to this nonsense, rambling answer.
And not getting the help.
I think a lot of ordinary working people, those who own homes, those who are renting, are being impacted by, increased incidences of house break-ins or car break-ins. My own car was broken into. But if you want a real solution to the problems you're worried about, then it's not going to be solved by blaming homeless people.
She said nothing. If you want real solutions, don't blame homeless people. That was her message. It was just a nonsense, rambling, I'm just going to flap my lips and see what comes out type of answer. But here's the one that everybody was incredulous. There was that meeting in Ballard last week where Mike O'Brien had earned the wrath of the Ballard people who are sick and tired of their houses being broken into, their cars being prowled, their family members being assaulted. And listen to how Kashama Sawant characterizes the upset people in Seattle right now.
There are people out there angry. Seattle residents are angry that they're not seeing an improvement, and they directly blame city council members like yourself for mismanagement of funds.
I think the media is paying too much attention to a few very, very loud right-wing NIMBYists who are, showed up to the city hall at city council meeting at Ballard.
Is it fair to call them right-wing NIMBYs? Many of those people voted for Mike O'Brien.
I think the people who went to Ballard and spewed out anti-homeless slurs, that is a right-wing position to have.
Okay, so make sure you understand this now. So according to Sawant, if you are upset about homes being broken into, about cars being broken into, and about family members being assaulted, that is a right-wing position. So it follows that if you like home break-ins and assaults, violent assaults on people, that is a left-wing position, according to Sawant. And to characterize the people who live in Seattle, I don't know too many right-wingers who live in the city. To characterize the people who have had enough as a bunch of right-wing NIMBYs, it shows that Kashama Sawant, pardon my bluntness, is pretty stupid. And that is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
First, let's go check the news. Then we're going to count down our favorite sound bites of the day next. Instead of awesome audio, because I don't have a top three here, but I have one story that I just love today. I've told you the story about my middle daughter, who you know very well.
Yes.
Both of you know very well. And I've always called her our miracle child because we had just switched insurance. An idiot doctor told my wife she had miscarried. They scheduled a D&C, and my wife said, I think he's wrong. And I thought my wife was just, you know, imagining things. But we paid out of pocket when we had no money to get a second opinion. And now she's a beautiful 24-year-old kid.
Yes.
Yeah. This is kind of a similar story. A 13-year-old boy, he named Trenton McKinley. He was doing what 13-year-old boys do. His buddy was driving like a motorized go-kart, and he was in a trailer behind it. And they whipped, and the kid overturned and suffered what everybody believed was a fatal brain injury.
Oh.
Doctors told him, your son's brain dead. And they said, will your family donate his organs? And so they were preparing to donate Trenton's organs, take him off life support, harvest the organs. All of a sudden, the hand moves. You want to hear Trenton today?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Here he is. The Today Show covered the story. He says, yeah, the docs didn't think I was going to make it.
They told me I'd be a vegetable. I don't really seem like a vegetable, do I?
He's 13 years old.
He's so cute.
And here's his mom.
Your whole world just crumbles. I had no idea how bad his injuries were.
And the mom says, well, now we think he's saved for something big.
God's got something big planned for that little man.
I love this kid. He's really funny.
I should make way better decisions. Like when I go back to my friend's house, and he's like, let's go ride a go-kart. Well, I'll drive.
You know what's weird, though? Because I saw a couple of stories with this kid, and one of the things he talked about is he thinks he saw heaven. When he was brain dead.
You hear that a lot.
Yeah. Today's show doesn't even mention that. But it was a big part of his story. And so we found one of the local affiliates that talked to him. He says that he remembers heaven.
I was walking down. It was more like an open field, walking straight. There's no other explanation but God. There's no other way that I could have came back. Even the doctor said...
I don't know why the Today Show would ignore that part of the story. That didn't make any sense to me. But the kid has kept his sense of humor.
I said I could turn my head sideways and put salsa in there and eat chips and dip out of my head.
You're a man.
No more washing dishes for me. She wouldn't let me put nothing in it.
Of course not.
I really wanted to see if I could.
They haven't replaced one side of his skull yet,
he's got a big divot in his head. So that's his salsa holder now, he says.
He is so funny.
Trenton McKinney, alive and well. We got a great Today sign next. And down the stretch we come. What a day on the show, what a show, what a day. My goodness. I tell you what, between Kshama Sawant and Mike O'Brien, the child rape apologist, Sally Bagshaw, Deborah Juarez, Lorena Gonzalez, the craziness on this council with the head tax, they could sink the entire region's economy. The people who don't have a vote in Seattle, the people who are normal in their thinking and their voting, who live in the suburbs and the rural areas, who live in other counties, you could see your entire regional economy sunk by a bunch of loons on the Seattle City Council. But I continue to guarantee you that I will do everything I can to make sure we have a little bit of power against these people who just see more money from you to government as their only reason for being in life. So we will indeed keep up the good fight. I guarantee you that. Before we get out of here into the sunny afternoon, it is time for today's edition of
Today's Sign that the end is near.
Let's make this Today's Sign triple shot here. You want a classic example of an out-of-touch corporate leader? I mean, this would be the perfect example of a corporate fat cat. His name is Mike Koop. He is a CEO, the head of Sainsbury's Supermarkets, which operate over in Europe. And they had just secured a brand new $10 billion deal. And so one of the TV networks in England, they wanted to get an interview with the CEO about they were acquiring another company. Their stock jumped up 15% with the announcement of the merger. So this knucklehead, he is sitting on camera about to do a satellite interview. The interview hasn't started yet, but he doesn't realize or he doesn't care that somebody back in the control room is watching him and he's already mic'd up and they're recording. Listen to the song this guy quietly sings to himself as he's about to do a satellite interview of his company's $10 billion acquisition of another company.
That sky is funny. Let's send it, friend, it rolling along. We're in the money, the sky is sunny. We're in the money, the sky is sunny. Let's send it, friend, it rolling along.
I mean, come on! How out of touch could a CEO get than this guy? He has apologized for what he called his unfortunate choice of a song. He said he was simply trying to compose himself before the TV interview. He said that he saw the musical that song comes from, 42nd Street, just last year, and it stuck in his head. Oh, yeah, you see something 6 months ago, it's pretty tough to get that out of your head. He's the kind of corporate leader that people wonder why, or the CEOs wonder why they get a bad rap when you do something like that, and then the whole world ends up seeing it. All right, today's Sign story number two. It's the story of a 26-year-old young woman, Angelique Sanchez. She has been cited for causing damage to a microwave oven at a 7-Eleven store in Denver. A store clerk saw her place something in the store's microwave and then heard a loud bang. The clerk told Angelique to clean up the mess, or the clerk said she would alert the police. Sanchez then wiped out the microwave, the liquid that she had put in there, and she wiped it out onto the floor. But the clerk said, "Do I smell urine?" And so the clerk called police, saw yellow liquid dripping from the microwave, and they confirmed, yes, this woman had put a urine sample into the microwave. Police found her a half mile away at a health clinic where she was waiting to undergo a physical exam and urinalysis for a potential job. Obviously, she was using somebody else's urine, was afraid that if it was room temperature, 70 degrees, that the clinic would get suspicious that it wasn't body temperature. So she put it in a 7-Eleven microwave to try to get it up to 98.6 degrees. Sanchez was not allowed to take the drug test that day at the clinic. And now that her name is in the news for trying to elude a drug test, she's going to be pretty tough to hire down the road if anybody does a Google search of her. All right, and finally in today's Sign, do we have any elevator music by any chance? Elevator music is our request for the day. I like it. A guy named Richard Lebo, he was on a crowded elevator. He's a professor of political theory at King's College. He was on a crowded elevator with a professor of gender studies during an academic conference in San Francisco. The professor of gender study, her name is Simona Sharoni, which is kind of like my Sharona. So the woman turned to the man and said, "What floor do you need?" And he jokingly said, "Ladies' lingerie, please." Just a stupid joke, not funny, but harmless as well. No, not to Simona Sharoni, the professor of gender studies. I have noticed over the years, professors of gender studies tend to be among the most humorless people on earth. So this woman gets so offended that the guy said, "Ladies' lingerie, for what floor?" She filed a complaint with the International Studies Association, which was holding this conference they were both attending. The conference found that the man had violated the group's code of conduct. The guy tried to resolve the matter himself. He wrote to the gender studies woman. He said he had no intention of making her feel uncomfortable. He wrote, "Like you, I am strongly opposed to the exploitation, coercion, or humiliation of women. As such evils continue, it seems to me to make sense to direct our attention to real offenses, not those that are imagined or marginal. By making a complaint to the conference that I consider frivolous, I expect the ethics committee will see it the same way. You may be directing your time and effort away from the real offenses that trouble us both." Well, that made the woman even more furious because he said her complaint was frivolous. So now the conference ordered the man to issue, quote, an unequivocal apology. He has refused to do so and now is facing disciplinary charges. Simona Sharoni, she said the reason for her complaint is she cannot remain silent when misogyny is at play. And that's where you are when you're dealing with mentally ill, insulated college professors. A guy says two words. "What floor do you want?" "Ladies' lingerie." And it becomes a huge incident. Our colleges and universities are in bad hands, man. And by the way, I don't think there was any love in that elevator. That is today's Sign, the End is Near, and that's going to do it for us. I've said everything I have to say for today. But I'm going to think up a bunch of new stuff. Lon and Don coming up next, and I will see you back here tomorrow. High noon.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.